You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, fellow fans of Fabulous Monarchs. I'm MC Williams of the Myths You Teach Your Hated podcast, here with a friendly reminder from Katie and Nathan. History can be a dirty business, as you're about to find out, so expect some inventive cursing in this episode. After all, sometimes the only word that can properly describe the movers and shakers of the world is asshole. If you're cool with some F-bombs to color your ancient goodness, then you're my kind of people, and you might like my show. Myths Your Teacher Hated tells mythology, legends, and fairy tales from all over the world in all of their original, bloody, uncensored glory. From the Aztec Empire to ancient Greece to the Ming Dynasty, you'll see that trickster gods are awesome and that sky gods are assholes. See? I told you that it's sometimes the right word. Enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Katie.
And this is Nathan.
And you're listening to Queen's Podcast, the show about badass women in history. Nathan.
Katie, it's time for another episode
of Queen's Podcast. The first episode of 2023. Woo!
I love it.
Yeah. We are now in our sixth year of the podcast. March is going to be 6 years.
Oh my gosh, 6 years. That's crazy to think about.
I know. It's been fun every single step of the way. And we have been talking about one thing for a while that we're a little bit closer to. We've been talking about for a while wanting to eventually do a Queen's Podcast listener meetup at the Tower of London. But I've been dragging Nathan for years for not having a passport, so we couldn't do that.
I know, and it's been very painful because I've been getting DMs from people being like, Nathan, get your passport.
Get your fucking
passport.
Nathan,
get your passport. Get your fucking passport, Nathan. And guess what Nathan did? He applied for his passport.
Woo!
So it is on the way. We just checked the status. It was about 4 weeks ago. So she's coming. So if we want a Tower of London meetup, we are ready to go.
Yeah. So keep listeners, keep your ears open. I was going to say eyes peeled, but that's not what you do on a podcast. But anyway, just pay attention and we'll definitely let y'all know when we are ready to plan that. So that'll be an exciting thing that I hope we can do in 2023. What do you think, Nathan?
I cannot wait.
Nathan, who are we talking about today?
We are talking about none other than Margaret of Austria, Ooh. The Duchess of Savoy, as she's most commonly known, and powerful, smart woman who was probably the most powerful woman in Europe for a while when she acted as regent for her nephew, you know, the Holy Roman Emperor, state of mind. But today, we're going to be talking about her early years.
Yeah. So I want to do a quick shout out to supporter Ava, because we ran a little contest on our Patreon for our highest tier supporters called the Queen Mothers. That's that level. And we were like, whoever wins is going to get to pick the next queen. And listener supporter Ava chose Margaret of Austria. And I absolutely love this. She was so much fun to research. So Nathan, is this... I don't know. Do you think that's maybe something we could do again soon? Like throw that up for the Queen Mother supporters to pick again soon?
I love this idea because I think it's a great thing to have because me and you pick all the time. And so it's like, oh, what can we pick now? It's great to just not have to do that.
Just take that off our plate, guys. That would be great.
Yeah, please. We love it.
Well, and it's also just a lot of fun to be able to do what our listeners want us, you know, what you guys really want. So, yeah. But so thank you, Ava. And now, Nathan, tell us about this cocktail.
Ooh, this cocktail is going to be tasty and delicious. Might be my new favorite out of all of the cocktails that we've made. This one is called the Habsburg Margarita. Ooh. So what you have in the Habsburg Margarita is 2 shots of tequila, 1/2 shot of blood orange liqueur, 1/2 shot of cranberry juice, and then 1 shot of lime juice. And then you put a little bit, I put about 1/2 shot of agave syrup, which is just agave nectar with water, and you boil it. And then you just put that in there, shake it up in an ice glass, and then serve it. You could also blend it up like Katie has. She has a mocktail, but she blended it up and has a frozen one. I put mine on the rocks. Either way is fine. It is beautiful. It's a cute little pink color. You garnish it with a lime, and it is tasty and delicious. It's just like a margarita, but cranberry and blood orange. Are you kidding me? It's delicious.
I love it. Longtime listeners of the show know that every year I do Dry January. So I did a mocktail version. There is this fake, like, substitute tequila by this brand called Ritual. I'll put a link in the show notes if you guys are also trying to do Dry January. Yeah, I did pretty much the exact same recipe, except I blended mine because I didn't know what to use in my replacement of liqueur. So I ended up just getting fresh, frozen berries, frozen cranberries and raspberries.
Yum.
And blending those up with the agave. And so, yeah, I did mine frozen with the substitute tequila by Ritual. And she's good.
That sounds really good.
She's refreshing as hell.
Berry margarita.
Yes. All right. So before we get started, we've got a couple of Patreon shout outs.
Shout out time.
Woo! So thank you so much to supporters Brandy, Abigail, Nancy, Carolyn, Sarah, and Michaela.
Also shout outs to Anne, Stephanie, Mary, Denise, Kitty, and Marlena.
And today we've also got a couple of Patreon supporters that just put really fun names for the name in there, like the name that they wanted shouted out. So
yeah,
first,
for sure.
Let's give a shout out to the Fabulous TT. Ooh.
Fabulous TT. Hey, Fabulous TT.
Hey, Fabulous TT. Hey, thank you, Fabulous TT.
That's what my ex-boyfriend said about me.
Oh.
Fabulous TT. And thank you to Their Majesties King Dom and Queen Kate of Seattle.
Oh, okay. We got some royal supporters up in here. But no, thank you to all of our Patreon supporters at every level and all of our listeners, even if you're not paying us. I still like you. Thank you. Thanks for hanging out.
Yeah, you're fun. You're good people.
All right, Nathan, let's get into Margaret. Tell me about her.
So, Margaret of Austria was born January 10th of 1480 in modern-day Belgium, and her father was Maximilian the First, Holy Roman Emperor, you know, state of mind.
Not real.
And through him, she's part of the Habsburg jaw, that lantern jaw, the Habsburg family, thus the name of the cocktail.
Though it looks like in her portraits, she did not get the jaw, so...
No, she did not get the jaw. The inbreeding had not hit just yet.
Okay.
And her mother was Mary of Burgundy, who was given the nickname Mary the Rich, which...
Yeah.
Yeah. She didn't really have to want much in her childhood, is what we're getting at.
Her mother was the ruler of the quote-unquote Low Countries in her own right, which I was like, what the fuck are the Low Countries? What does that mean? Well, that refers to the part of Europe that is today modern-day Belgium, the Netherlands, Luxembourg. And that's kind of where, when she was in her parents' lands, she spent most of her time in the Low Countries, and she was born in Belgium. So her dad's running the Holy Roman Empire. Her mom's running Netherlands, Belgium, Luxembourg. So this family is covering a lot of land. Like, they are loaded.
Yes, and her parents had a dynastic marriage, but it seemed like they actually loved each other, so that's nice.
How refreshing.
Finally.
I put some pictures of her parents in the show notes here. I just love her mother's outfit. Like,
yeah, I love her mother's outfit, too. And you can totally tell that the jaw has not hit the family yet.
Yes, yes.
And Margaret had one older brother who we have met before on this podcast, Philip. He was known to be Philip the Handsome. Looking at his pictures, was he handsome?
I feel like, maybe the standards were different back then. Maybe this is just a really bad portrait. I don't know.
Yeah, but her brother is that fucking guy that did Juana of Castile so horrible. And, ugh.
Yeah.
But right now, Juana, we're just not going to,
No.
Go listen to that episode.
Yeah.
She's just a baby at this
point. Yeah, Philip's just a baby. He's a handsome baby, I guess. So Margaret and Philip were raised by their step-grandmother, who, her name was Margaret of York. Which, you know, longtime listeners or people that study this era a lot might recognize that of York. She is from that York family, the English family. She was sister of two English kings, Edward IV and Uncle Dick, a.k.a. Richard III. And she is a very, very powerful Dowager Duchess of Burgundy. And she's put in charge of raising these babies. So, you know, she's got to be like smart, very capable herself to be running these lands and raising these children.
And sadly, in 1483, Margaret of Austria's mom, Mary, dies really young.
Yeah.
She fell from a horse and ended up dying this really long, dragged out death, which is just horrible.
We all hope that, you know, if you're going to go quickly. Sadly, that was not Mama Mary's plot in life. She lingered, which, hate this for her. Hate this journey for her.
Agreed.
After her mom dies, her dad really did grieve her and threw like this huge over the top funeral and everything. But then he looks around and he's like, all right, we've got to get our heads in the game. We have to make some alliances now that we've kind of lost this other, you know, footholding now that Mary's gone. We need to make some alliances. And he decides, you know what? My daughter isn't getting any fucking younger. It's time to marry her off and make peace with France.
Yup. And at the ripe old age of 3 years old, she's engaged.
Three.
Ooh, yeah, I know. But at least she's engaged to the son of the King of France. I mean, maybe that's a consolation prize.
Yeah.
But the king's name was Louis XI, and the Dauphin, her fiancé, was named Charles. Margaret was 3. Charles was 13. So this is going to be a pretty long engagement if you don't know what I'm getting at here.
Yeah. But so Maggie was sent to France at age 3. And luckily, it was actually put in the marriage contract that, like, she would not be expected to actually consummate this marriage until she was, like, post-puberty age, like, probably, like, 15 or something like that.
Thank God!
Oh, my God. But still, this agreement and engagement, it's viewed as, like, a legally binding actual marriage, even though they never, like, well, we'll get to it in a little bit, but, like, for the rest of her life, Margaret did view this as her first marriage. So put a pin in that. Put a pin in that.
The thing is, her dad, Maximilian, didn't want her to be raised in France, but it was a big part of the argument, you know, future Queen of France, mm-hmm. she needs to be raised to be French.
Right.
Just makes sense.
It does.
So when it was time for her to move, the French king sent his dudes to escort her to her ship. And those dudes were armed guards, like big, scary knights. Mm-hmm. And because they were afraid Maximilian was going to try to stop her from going somehow.
Right. I wonder if Margaret remembers this. Do you remember anything from when you were 3? I think I have one or two memories from, like, when I was that young.
I do. I do have, like, one or two memories. I climbed out of a crib. That was, like, a two-year-old memory where, like, I remember doing stuff like that. Yeah.
I hope she doesn't remember this because this sounds traumatic as fucking hell. Like, she's 3 and she is being escorted by these strangers with weapons away from, like, the only home she's ever known. That sounds like something she's going to need to work through in therapy later.
Right. We hope that she doesn't remember that, but we do hope that she remembers, like, you know, a little bit later whenever she arrived in Paris, because she was brought into the city dripping in jewels a la Guanzo, wearing the most expensive gowns money could buy, which, I mean, can you imagine just being a peasant covered in dirt, smelling like shite, and being like, all of this for some baby? Like, can I have some food, please?
Yeah,
please?
Like... But after she arrived, I read that their betrothal was consecrated. So I Googled what does consecrated mean, and it says it's something about, like, having it officially, like, recognized by the church or something.
Jesified.
Yes. So their marriage contract was Jesified, and there was some kind of church ceremony, and they did mass about it. They did mass about them being engaged. Here are these two children. Cool. Like, they're engaged now. It was a big deal.
But what we do know is that her first few years there, Margaret was treated like the queen that she deserved to be.
Yes.
She was doted on. She was spoiled. She literally, just like earlier in her life, she wanted for nothing in her life.
Exactly.
It's like they believe that she's, you know, our future queen. Yeah, she's a baby now, but she's going to remember us whenever she's growing up and how we treated her. So, you know, and also she's this really sweet, charming kid. So she's just easy to love anyway. You know, she's popular.
She's popular. She's popular.
She's going to be popular.
Yes, she is. We are the gayest duo. That was...
Are you kidding me?
That was so theater kid of us. Like, that we didn't even plan that. We were both just like, wicked, yes, popular. Anyway, the year after that Margaret arrived, King Louis died. And now her 14-year-old fiancé is king. He is King Charles VIII of France. And while today we'd be like, 14 seems a little young to be king. That is our opinion. Back then... It wasn't unheard of. Like, there had been kings that were three, you know, like, that wasn't, it was young, but it, like, he still needed a regent. He still needed a regency, someone to help him run shit until he hit his majority, which I think is like 16, somewhere between 16 and 18. But at 14, he was expected to take on some responsibilities, like some, like play a little bit of a role, even if it's just like practice, you know?
Yeah, doing a little something around court.
Yeah.
But he's just not into it at all. Charlie liked to party, and he liked to go hunting and have a good time. And honestly, at this stage in his life, he did not give a fuck about the matter of states.
Zero fucks given.
Or little baby fiance over there. So, I mean, I can't be super mad at him because he's like 14 and she's like 4, so obviously you're not interested in the same things.
Yeah,
she's learning how to speak English.
French.
You are that's great. She's learning to speak French, but she's just, this isn't like, what do you have in common with a 4-year-old?
You can't be mad that he wasn't like doting on his little fiance because he's a teenager and she is a toddler. You know, like, Charlie VIII had an older sister named Anne. Anne was 22 and she was smart as fucking hell. In fact, their dad, Louis, had said that something along the lines of, like, Anne is the smartest woman in the country. She is the most equipped person in the country to rule France. So it's really a fucking shame that she was skipped over for her adolescent brother when France could have had such a competent ruler in the long term in her. But instead, she just acts as regent for Charlie over the next few years.
And Charlie was like, hey, can you take care of Margaret too? You know, I'm 14 years old. I have no idea to do with a 4-year-old. Like, how do I manage that? So Margaret was moved into Anne's home.
Right. Actually, Margaret wasn't the only one, because Anne was so well respected and so well educated. A lot of the noble families in France and like some of the surrounding counties and stuff like looked over and were like, I want this woman in charge of my daughter's education. So a lot of other noble French girls got sent over there and they were getting bomb ass educations. Like, this is a generation of girls that were just pretty much educated on par with boys, which now seems like a no-brainer, but back then was like pretty revolutionary.
Yeah, we finally get we can educate women. What?
One thing though, another thing that she put in place was measures of manners. And one thing that I read that I was just like, okay, she would tell the girls, you know, if your nose is running, get a napkin. Don't just wipe it with your hands. Don't just wipe it on your dress. Get a napkin. And back then it was like, okay, you think you're better than us? Like, even the nobility would like walk around with snot on their hands.
She invented Kleenex, is what you're telling me. She totally invented Kleenex.
The concept of Kleenex, yes.
One of her closest friends growing up was this noble girl named Louise of Savoy. And her parents were the Duke and Duchess of Savoy, and they had very, very similar stories. Their mothers died when they were young. They were both engaged to boys from powerful French families. So needless to say, with similar backgrounds, they hit it off. Mm-hmm. And Louise has a brother named Philbert, which I just love.
Philbert.
Philbert. And we will put a pin in that guy. And he may be important for a little bit later.
Later. On. Yeah, maybe in part two. I put in the show notes, they did a really, really cute portrait of Margaret when she was 11. And I'll definitely throw that up on Instagram as well. It's hanging in the Met, I believe, in New York right now. So, Nathan, we should make our way to the Met sometime soon to see it. But I feel like a lot of the times, it just shows her status, because I feel like a lot of the times for these royal women, we get one official portrait of them ever, and that's like when they're adults. And so to have this one of her whenever she was a little kid, and it's so pretty. And you can tell that she's such a cute little kid too from it, I think.
She's looking fierce, just like her mama was.
And you
she's
can tell.
Looking great.
She's got a little bit of hair sticking out, so you can tell that she's blonde. She's got, if you zoom in, the pearls on, like, the details around her neck have little C's and M's on them for Charles and Margaret.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah, she's a regal as fuck little kid, gonna be Queen of France sometime. Anyway, yeah, I'll put that...
She literally has very little to complain about.
Yes.
Her upbringing is amazing. Her dad is emperor, her fiancé is a king, she has people that care about her. What could possibly go wrong?
And that's where we're going to end this episode. No. And that's it. She lived happily ever after. You know what? Before something does go wrong, why don't we take a quick break? I'm going to make myself another one of these mocktails and we'll be right back.
I'm going to make an actual cocktail because I like cock.
I have no follow-up there. Okay, we'll be right back.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, y'all. Spooky season is here. And if you're looking for a show to whet your appetite for a little haunted history, then I'd like to invite you to check out Southern Gothic, a chart-topping history podcast that explores some of the most infamous legends, folklore, ghost stories, and hauntings of the American South. We've covered all sorts of stuff from the Bell Witch of Tennessee to the disappearance of the Confederate submarine, the H.L. Hunley, not to mention our deep dives into the local lore of some of America's oldest and most haunted cities, like New Orleans, Charleston,
and St. Augustine. So, if you're ready for a little good old-fashioned Halloween storytelling with a commitment to quality historical research, then be sure to check out Southern Gothic today. It's available now on all your favorite podcast apps.
And we're back.
So
things were going absolutely great for baby Maggie until they weren't.
Until they weren't.
Wah, wah, wah.
Right. So, like, let's fast forward about 5 years. And so we're going to change gears a little bit as well. So the year is 1488, and the Duke of Brittany has just died.
It's Brittany, bitch.
It's Brittany, bitch.
I love that.
So Brittany is this very rich, like, duchy. The Duke of Brittany is a very rich and powerful dude. And when he died, his 11-year-old daughter, Anne of Brittany, was his only heir. Anne of Brittany is a super fascinating woman who we will discuss one day. She's the only woman that was Queen of France twice, married two different kings of France.
Love it.
Yeah.
Kind of
so
jealous.
We're not I don't think she was happy with either of them, that,
oh,
if I remember
now
correctly.
I'm not.
But, yeah, we won't spend too much time on her, but... yeah, let us know if you want us to cover her in the future. But anyway, her dad is dead, and she is now the only heir to Brittany, and she's 11 years old. She's fully aware that she is living in history and that history is a bag of dicks, and she looks around, and she's like, if I don't get married right away, someone is going to come and kidnap me or take my lands or try to poison me, force me into a marriage. If I don't take control of the situation and get an alliance ASAP, I'm fucked. Very smart girl.
So she looks around and is like, who's got money, honey?
Money.
And who can flex those muscles because they're powerful? And who's single because you can't marry a married man because that might be a problem. Anne Boleyn. And she lands on Maximilian, Margaret of Austria's dad. So she calls him up and is like, hey, how would you like to add Duke of Brittany to your list of titles? AKA, will you marry me?
She proposes to him, an 11-year-old. I love that.
I know. And Maximilian is like, yes, yes.
Yeah, girl.
Absolutely.
Yeah, girl.
Here we go.
She's 11. He's 30. Don't think about it too much. Don't think about it. Max and Anna Brittany marry by proxy 2 years later.
Yeah, and if you're new to marriages by proxy, which was a weird tradition from the old times, I mean, we've covered it in a couple of different episodes, but it's if a couple couldn't get together because they're in different countries and a marriage alliance actually needed to be completed ASAP. So each couple would have this little wedding ceremony wherever they were in the world at the time, and someone else would stand in for their partner. So you just have this little mock wedding that was legally binding at the end of the day. But those marriages weren't really considered totally binding until after ye old boning happened, a.k.a.
consummation. But you can't fuck by proxy.
I know. I don't even want to know how that would happen. It can't.
Can't fuck by proxy. I think we need to make some anniversary cards or something for the merch store. some wedding cards. You can't fuck by proxy. It's such a weird little tradition. Like
they did
back then. Yeah. Anyway, so Margaret has a stepmom now. But then the following year, her fiance / husband or whatever, Charles, is like, you know what? I really like the sound of Duke of Brittany. I would really love to be Duke of Brittany. And so he sends troops to attack those lands. So stepmom Anne calls back up Maximilian and is like, husband, hello, I need troops, I need help, I'm afraid this guy is going to try to take me prisoner or worse. He leaves her on red. What? Maximilian doesn't send any help to his little, he's like calling himself Duke of Brittany over here, but he's not protecting his bride. Like, how fucked up is that?
It's that Holy Roman Emperor state of mind.
Douchebag state of mind. The fuck?
And so
that made me really mad, in case you can't tell. I'm like, what the fuck, dude?
Katie's burst. And so, but anyway, so since Maximilian didn't send troops, Charles is like, okay, you got two choices. You can run off to Maximilian and, you know, I just take your lands and titles away. Or you can keep your title, keep your castles, keep your lands, but you have to marry me to become Queen of France.
She's like, Anne's like, are you fucking crazy? I'm already married. You're already married. With the
does it work?
He was like, technicality. You know, like, you have never met your husband in real life. And my wife is a child. So that means both of us haven't consummated our marriages.
This little shady lady.
You can't fuck by proxy. And thank God he's not sleeping with his child bride. And so he's like, that means that we could both pretty easily get out of our marriages if we want to. And she's like, I don't want to. And he's like, I don't really fucking care.
That is exactly what happened. So
direct quote.
Yeah. Long story short, Margaret's former stepmom is now married to her former fiance. Our girl Maggie is now single and ready to mingle. But Charles doesn't want to send her home just yet. If she was still there in France, he had a bargaining chip with her dad.
Yeah, it makes me think of, you know, like Theon in Game of Thrones. Like, you know, if she's with me,
you always make
her
a Game of Thrones reference.
I always do. But yeah, if she's with me, you can't start shit because I could do harm to
her. Yeah.
Yeah. Sadly, though, Margaret didn't want to leave France. I mean, she loved France because up until this point in her life, France had been her whole world, you know? She's been there since she was three. Her identity, her self-identity was rooted in, I'm the Queen of France. The people here love me. I don't remember living in Belgium, you know? Like, she speaks French. She dresses like the French. Everybody she knows is French. Like, would she even recognize her step-grandma, her brother, or her dad if she saw them, you know?
No. And unfortunately, the French court didn't feel the same affinity towards her. And though she was still housed in a palace and got to keep all her nice stuff, overnight, people just started treating her differently. Yeah. She immediately was treated like an absolute social pariah in the only home she's ever really known. Really sad. Like, I hate this for her.
That is so sad. Another thing she's going to need therapy for.
I know. Like, not as much as Genji. Genji needed therapy.
Genji needed the most therapy. Actually, there's a lot of historical
figures that needed therapy.
Caligula needed therapy. There's a lot of people that could have done this. And we're not even sponsored by them, but BetterHelp. Anyway. No, that's just really sad. Because, yeah, overnight she went from being just like America's sweetheart, France's sweetheart, to fucking nobody. Like, I hate that. Something we're going to learn later several times in telling her story is that Maggie A. loved being in love. And even though she's really young, she considered herself very much in love with Charles. Which that fucking guy has gone down in history as like not a particularly great king and kind of an asshole and also really ugly. So I think she dodged a bullet. I want to read you a quick passage, or do you want to read the quick passage?
No,
Nathan?
Go for it.
Okay. I want to read you a quick passage of something that I read describing Charles VIII, because he, like, would later go on and try to, like, conquer Italy. Do you remember the French king in the TV show The Borgias?
Yes.
That's this guy.
This fucking guy.
So he's described as very small, short-sighted, and distressingly ugly.
What? Ouch. Ouch. Oh, I want to Google a picture of him now.
He walked with a crouch and a limp. His feet were too big, and it was rumored he had a sixth toe. He was notoriously gluttonous and lecherous, and he was appallingly ill-educated.
Oh my gosh.
So that is how people viewed him. Yep, there he is.
He's Nathan ugly.
Nathan has Googled it. Well, nobody from this time is particularly good looking. But
this one is terrible. He's got a nose that takes up 3/4 of his face. Take up the other quarter of his face, and a butt chin. And poor guy. You know,
look, I love a big nose.
Aphrodite was not smiling down on him.
No. But no, yeah. So I think she dodged a bullet, but yeah, Maggie at the time, it was like she had been told this is going to be your husband. So she like forced herself in love with him her entire life. And now she's brokenhearted.
Yeah. And this is where Maggie enters her emo phase. She cuts all of her hair off, makes it in like that, you know, diagonal with the dark hair, bangs. Maybe one little blonde streak just to be like, I'm a little bit wild.
She gets really into the Smiths.
Yes. So emo Margaret has her headphones on and she's listening to the Smiths as she's being sent back home to her mother's lands in Belgium in 1493 at the age of 13. And she is sent back to live with her step-grandmother, Margaret of York. Here she comes again. At this point, she's been in France for 10 years. So this is an adjustment. Like, she is in a different land, different culture. Everything's off the charts different.
And she's sad. Mm-hmm. That's what her step-grandma, Margaret of York, writes to Maximilian. She's just like, oh, I'm so happy to have her back. She's so pretty. She's petite and blonde and well-educated. She's well-mannered. She carries herself like a queen, but she's sad. She's depressed. She's just emo as fuck right now, which, I mean, I don't blame her, you know?
Yeah. And Maximilian writes back, but she's single and we can't have that. So
she's an old maid at this point. She's 13, yeah. Nathan.
Oh, gosh. She's so old. So Maximilian starts shopping around for a new husband for this, you know, jilted 13-year-old daughter. And that's when he starts talking to this other fucking guy. Every time I see the name, I'm just like, why? A dude named Ferdinand of Aragon.
Maybe you've heard of him.
Well, and Ferdinand or Max, and Max are both like, hey, fuck France. And France. You know what? Fuck France right in the croissant. So they decide on a double marriage alliance.
Okay, a little refresher to anyone who is new to Queen's Podcast, or maybe just this time in history. This is our fourth episode where Ferdinand is a supporting character.
Four too many,
honestly, because fuck this guy. I could go, I can and I have gone on rants about why I hate Ferdinand of Castile, or Ferdinand of Aragon. He was the cheating husband in our two Isabel of Castile episodes.
Yes.
He was the neglectful father in our Catherine of Aragon episode. And then he was Jamie Spears in our two Juana of Castile episodes. So, poor baby Juana.
I know.
Hashtag poor baby Juana. Justice for Juana.
Juana of Castile, Juana. Not the other name that they like to call her. Ugh.
No. Oh, we had a merch suggestion from somebody. So if somebody wants to design this for us, please do. It's like somebody asked for something that said like Juana wasn't crazy on it, and then underneath it have it say it that in Spanish as well.
Oh. a cute idea.
Somebody wants to design that for us, please. Yeah. Slide into our DMs. Anyway.
So, if this is your first time meeting Ferdinand, or you haven't opened up a history book about it at all, he is the co-ruler of what we consider today modern Spain. His wife is Isabella of Castile, and they are the power couple of Europe at the time.
Power couple.
Yeah. Yes. So this is a very, very attractive alliance, the Holy Roman Emperor.
Mm-hmm. Ferdinand and Isabella have a son named Juan and a daughter named Juana.
I can just imagine them being like, okay, we're going to name him Juan, and we'll name her Juan, Juana. Yeah.
So they decide that Margaret will marry Juan, and her brother Philip will marry Juana. And this is just, I mean, it's a great alliance for them, but it's also just a big old middle finger to Charles over in France.
Yeah, can you imagine, like, two power countries that are right around you that make an alliance? That's intimidating.
And this is a good alliance, too. And it's, you know, but also because sometimes history is also just a dick-waving competition. And this is a good
instance of that. It always is a dick-waving competition.
It still is a lot of the time.
Yes. In 1496, Margaret is 16, so she got her new convertible.
She's got her driver's license, y'all. She can drive around the Low Countries. Nathan, tell the listeners about your first car. Your first car was so delightful.
Yes, my first car, a 1967 Volkswagen Bug. And it was...
How reliable was it?
Not reliable at all. Whenever you opened up the back, it looked like a lawnmower engine that you literally needed the little string to start. But it was gold and silver, which sounds awful, and it was. It was just so tacky. It was cute, and I loved it.
I remember riding in it, though, but getting, like, a little bit dizzy from the fumes.
Yeah, because there was gasoline leaking into the... Don't light up a cigarette. You might combust.
I think that if Margaret of Austria would have gotten a car for her 16th birthday, it would have been a little bit nicer.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, it would have been. So anyway. It's 1496, Margaret 16, and her and Juan are married by proxy, a.k.a. It's like the modern day getting married in Vegas. Like, you just randomly have to get married, and it's like let's go do this. Now. And it's like, let's right now, it. Even though it's like in different areas, you just have to get married right now. Like, and so
can you get married by Zoom?
Sure. I'm sure. Come on, COVID. I'm sure COVID. You may now kiss the bride. You kiss the camera.
I mean, someone should have the marriage certificate. I wonder. Anyway, I guess I know what I'm looking up later.
Just for her 90 day fiance fix.
Yes.
So Maggie is now the princess. Maggie is now the princess of Asturias. Prince of Asturias is what they call the male heir in Spain. You know, I'm getting this vibe that Margaret was a bit like, okay, my last marriage didn't work out that well. This one might not work out that well. So let's not get too excited about this.
Yeah, she's still got the Smiths on. She's got that song that's like, and you cry and you want to die. You know, she's just emo'd. You know, the one that, like, opened up. What was that TV show with the witches?
I am human and I need to be loved.
Oh, my gosh.
Like everyone else does.
She's real deep into her Smiths era. Charmed.
Charmed. Charmed. Oh, gosh. I was going to have insomnia for, like, 3 days straight until I figured
but
that
yeah,
out.
It was the theme song for Charmed. So
waking
she's
up,
listening
like,
to
witches,
that,
witches,
being like,
what do they do?
What do they do? She's listening to that, being like, I'm not getting my hopes up. I have been burnt before, and you cry and you want to die.
So soon after her big, fat proxy wedding, she's on a boat to Spain. And it goes bad. Real bad, y'all.
Real bad.
They hit a big storm, and was scared.
Erwin is scared, indeed.
And remember, Maggie is still listening to the Smiths. So she's in her emo phase. And so she takes time to jot all this down in a super quick poem. Here lies Margaret, the willing bride, twice married but a virgin when she died.
Bless her heart. Bless her. That is the most 16-year-old emo poem I've ever read. Like,
I was supposed to be wedded, but I never got to bone.
No, oh, bless her little emo heart. But she doesn't die a virgin. Spoiler alert. She does make it to Spain. Again, we have to imagine that she's probably pretty apprehensive about this whole thing. She's still a little butthurt from the France of it all. And she doesn't know these people. She's been sent here to live with strangers. So she's probably in her mind, like, what's going to stop them from treating me badly, too? And, you know, her last dude embarrassed the hell out of her, broke her heart, married her stepmom. They all went on Maury. Like, it was an ordeal.
Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine. So when Juan and Ferdinand meet after her arrival, she's nervous.
Yeah.
Can you blame her?
Absolutely not.
And she sees them and curtsies and tries to give each one of them a polite kiss on the cheek. And they were like, OMG, what are you doing? We're huggers in this family.
And yeah, they just shower her with affection and love and hugs and gifts and compliments and just like, oh my God, we're so happy you're here. And like, isn't that the best case scenario for her?
Right.
Like, she gets taken back to this palace where she gets to meet the entire family because, you know, Juan had lots of sisters, so he would have, and his mom, so she meets, like, Isabella of Castile, she meets, like, Catherine of Aragon, and they are so excited to meet her, and she just clicks with the whole family immediately, and I love that.
Yeah, they basically all fall in love with each other. Like, this is so crazy. Like, finally, she's in love with the person, and we know that she loves to be in love.
Yes.
We've talked about the children of Isabella of Castile before and how all of them were madly in love with their spouses.
Yeah.
So that's a very interesting dynamic that we won't go into too much because, you know, we've done the Juan of Castile episode, but her son, no different. He loved his new bride.
Oh, good for them. How cute.
No.
Oh, this was a very happy time for Margaret. Thank God. She puts away the black. She is out of the emo phase and she is into like a happy, loving. She needed this. I'm so happy for her. And also, they're about the same age. She's like 16, almost 17. He's like 18. Neither of them, like 16 or 18 now is maybe too young to be getting married, but back then, no. Like, that was, they are past puberty, so we are fine with it, and they're about the same age, so it's not creepy. It's a good match. It's a good match, both dynastically and personally.
Yeah, so something that I wonder about their marriage, they were married by proxy, which is legally binding, but they still needed to have their official in-person church wedding. So she arrived in Spain in late February, maybe early March, and they had their official wedding in April.
Could they bone in the intermittent?
Could they
go to Bone Town? I don't know.
She's got her driver's license. She can drive on into Bone Town.
She's got a one-way ticket to Bone Town. Did she use it? I don't know. And like, oh my God, me trying to research this, I like didn't even know. Like, I'm just like, first of all, my FBI agent that watches my search history is like, what the fuck is she even trying to look up? Like, proxy wedding. Sex ? Before church wedding? Like,
how does one? But I mean, it's a valid question. If you have a legally binding marriage, you're technically married, so therefore you could have sex. Period.
Right?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
But then what's even the point of the church wedding?
Well, so that people can see you actually together.
Yeah. Ceremony?
She sips her drink with her pinky up.
I just,
you know, ceremony.
I'm good. Let's move on.
Hello, everyone. It's Takuya here.
And I'm Gabby.
And we are the hosts of History of Everything, a podcast which you can probably guess by the name is, well, I mean, it's about everything. Do you want to know why people thought potatoes were evil and would give you syphilis? Are you curious about all the stories of the terrible and stupid ways that people have kicked the bucket over the years? Do you want to hear tales about all of the different badasses of history and the lives that they had brought to life? Well, if so, then look no further. History of Everything is just the right podcast for you. It's available on Spotify, Pandora, and anywhere else that you get your podcast from. Join us for some fun and just see how weird and wacky history can be.
Hello, everyone. You may recognize me as Gabby from the History of Everything podcast.
And my name is Brenna, and you don't recognize me from anything yet.
Together, we're two scientists who explore all of the weird little questions and conspiracies of the universe in our new podcast, Mystery of Everything. Everything has an explanation.
We hope.
But that is what we're here to figure out. We will dive into the science behind many popular conspiracy theories, such as vaccines causing autism, flat earth theory, and was the moon landing fake? And if so, why the heck would anyone even do that?
But it's not just conspiracies. There's a lot of cool mysteries that we will attempt to use science to explain, such as near-death experiences, what made the Vikings go berserk, and can I control my co-host with MK Ultra?
Wait, what? Anyway, make sure to check out the Mischief Everything podcast everywhere where you find your podcasts.
We're back again. Yes. And we're back in Maggie's story. So in April 3rd of 1497, Maggie and Juan were married in a huge over-the-top wedding ceremony, followed by weeks and weeks of celebration.
It was a huge deal.
Yeah, it was partying, traveling from town to town around Spain for like weeks. And it was just a party everywhere they went to celebrate their marriage.
Yes, y'all, for real. I would say a contemporary comparison for how popular Margaret was in Spain. Think Princess Diana in the 1980s, except that her husband actually liked her.
Think about that.
Think a happy Princess Diana, the people's princess. Like, people were tripping over themselves to give her gifts, tell her how loved she was. And she's just charming people left and right with, like, her wit, her sense of humor, her grace, her elegance, her beauty. Like, she is a hit.
Yeah, and she gets along with the new family, too. So that's a big thing.
Yes.
Like, Ferdinand loves showing her off. They end up playing card games because he's a dude bro. And they tell dirty jokes because he's a dude bro. But she and Isabella, since Isabella's more of the intellectual, smart kind of gal that doesn't want to just play games and tell jokes. She likes to read books and listen to music. And that's, you know, Maggie could get along with her there,
yeah,
too.
Margaret's like, do you know the Smiths? And she's like, no, honey, we're not doing that.
Isabella's
like, mm-mm, no, thank you. And this marriage, if it hadn't already been consummated, it certainly was, like, immediately after the church wedding.
Do we have receipts?
Well, she got pregnant. Is that a receipt enough?
That's a receipt. That's a big receipt. That's a big receipt.
She's pregnant. Yay! She would have been thrilled by this. Her whole family would have been thrilled by this. All of Spain would have been thrilled by this. This is the next, because remember, Isabella and Ferdinand each, you know, respectively brought part of Spain together. So the child of Juan and Margaret was going to be like a generation that finally cements the unity of Spain. What we know today is like basically modern day Spain. So yeah, it was like a whole new generation, a whole new era, just huge time of celebration in her life.
This was probably the happiest time in Margaret's life so far. So of course, everything has been gonna shift.
Of course it does. Okay, do you remember that episode of Friends? We find out that when Joey is reading a book and it gets to a part that he doesn't like, he puts it in the freezer. to stop.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Like when he's reading, like he's reading Little Women and he's like, Beth is really sick. And Rachel's like, you want to put Little Women in the freezer? I want to put this story in the freezer right here.
Right. Can we stop?
I don't want Juan to die.
Spoiler alert. Juan dies. He's never
really
been
sick.
The picture of health. Yeah. Like, he's always been sickly. He's, you know, been partying a lot the last few weeks, drinking, traveling, eating a lot. And poor baby, it took a toll on his health.
The rumor, there was a rumor basically that this was Margaret's fault. And this pisses me off so bad. Just being like, oh, she made him overdo it in the bedroom. Like, people actually said that out loud, that she caused
so
the death of her husband.
It wasn't consensual.
From
she
making
forced
him fuck
him.
Too much.
Yeah, okay. So okay. He's 18 yeah. years old. Back off.
Yeah. And like, if she would have heard that rumor, that would have broke. That's so fucking gross. I just, ugh. Gag is all I have to say
right.
to that. Let's move on.
So we don't know exactly what illness Juan had, but we do know that he quote unquote succumbed to a fever. And sweet baby Prince Juan, the husband that Margaret loved so much, died in October of 1497.
I feel like devastated isn't a strong enough word to explain the grief that followed Juan's death.
Agreed.
Margaret was brokenhearted, obviously. All of Juan's family was just beside himself. The entire country was just like, what now? What next? Like, brokenhearted, except for maybe the Jewish and Muslim people. But that's
yeah,
a story
that
for
was
another
a thing.
Time.
Yeah, that, I mean, we could go down. I mean, Isabella Castile, we love you, but you were problematic
genocide-y, not great with other religions.
Remember, Maggie's in the early stages of pregnancy, so everyone is walking on eggshells with her.
Yeah.
This child she's carrying is the next generation of rulers in a united Spain, so it's
right.
a big deal.
And Margaret was treated very, very well in this time, but history is horrible. So her baby, unfortunately, was born stillborn. And to put another fucking dagger in her heart, the baby was born on April 2nd, which was a day before the one-year anniversary of her and Juan's church wedding.
I hate this so much. Why did you invite me to this party? Can I go home?
I want to cry. Just like, any empaths out there listening to this, I bet you're bawling your fucking eyes out. Like, can you fucking imagine just the heartbreak she must have been dealing with?
I don't like this.
I don't like
it's a really dark time for her, obviously. But luckily, she did have the support from Juan's family, where a lot of people would have been like, a lot of royal families that we've researched would have been like, get back to your country. You're no longer needed here. Your husband's dead.
Your baby's
they
dead.
Actually, yeah, they actually took her in. And Isabella of Castile took her in and grieved with her.
Yeah.
And she staying in Spain for the next 2 years, which is huge.
Yeah.
And while we hate that, you know, she had a stillborn child and her husband died, we do love that she at least wasn't alone in all of this grief.
Yeah.
And that she wasn't immediately thrown into a new marriage. She was allowed to properly grieve and had a good support system. So,
yay. I mean, it's true, though. You know, in grieving, like, if she would have been sent home, I'm sure they would have treated her well and understood she was grieving. But when grieving, I really do think it helps to have people there that you can tell stories, like that everyone knew him and you can tell stories about everything that y'all did together. And yeah, it just breaks my heart that it happened, but I'm so happy that she did get that chance to have that closure and that therapy, really, honestly. But because she's still a bargaining chip for her dad, eventually she did have to go back home and she was on a boat again. In 1500, she was heading back to Belgium to her family home.
Again.
To enter into marriage negotiations.
Again. She must have been nervous. You know, who will they choose for me? Am I going to love them? Will I love again? How is my new family going to treat me? What does my future hold?
And I think that is a good place to leave her on this little cliffhanger until next time. All right, Nathan. Well, I will talk to you in a couple of weeks about what happens with the rest of Margaret of Austria.
And I can't wait.
All right.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Cheers, bitches.
Cheers.